USN Fred Warner gets paid by the Niners, but where does he rank among the BYU all-time NFL players? And it's now official, Cougar Hoops will open the 2025 season in Las Vegas. Do we like this game to start things off? How much did Yegor Demin climb in the draft after an incredible combine? Rafael Barlow of Locked On NBA Draft breaks it down. And the latest from the business of college football, revenue gaps and the possibility of having to sign away your rights to remain in the club.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy May 20th. I am Spencer Linton alongside a man who maybe could find $63 million in his couch, Jerem Jordan.
Yeah, we've left a few million there. A few million doll hairs, maybe. Big 12 great Fred Warner gets a contract extension. Congratulations. We'll talk about that in a moment. And Brock Purdy got his contract, too. So the Big 12 tweeted, one Cougar, one Cyclone, two bags. Or if you're from Minnesota, can it bags?
That's a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Big 12 represent, though. On point with the social media team. I'm just happy for Fred. Much more on this to come.
Could we have gotten one where he wasn't blinking? Or is he looking down? Like, was there not another photo available? Just wondering.
It looks like they went to a video and took a screen grab of the only thing they could find with Fred Warner and Brock Purdy in the same frame.
Frankly, that's worse.
It's probably what happened there. But at least they're together. At least they're together, and at least they're getting paid.
Yeah. Good for them.
How much money do you actually think is in your couch cushions right now?
$0. We keep it.
You're pretty good about that?
Yeah, there's zero coins. We don't have coins around. We barely have cash.
It's true. There aren't many coins just in circulation.
Is that a random credit card sliding down there?
But whenever my in-laws come to visit, randomly, whenever they leave, there's always coins in the couch cushions.
Well, that's part of the payment of visiting you. You got to leave a little bit of change there.
Deposit the coins.
How much was this visit worth? 73 cents.
Rolling in the dough. Fred Warner certainly is. He's just one of many things to discuss as we rise and shout and get to what's trending.
Oh, one of the best linebackers in the National Football League.
He's got the full package.
Fred Warner from BYU.
Picked off. Fred Warner has it.
He's legit. He's a real deal.
Fred Warner, All-Pro Fred, signs a three-year, $63 million extension with $56.7 million guaranteed, making him the highest-paid interior linebacker in the National Football League, which he should be because he's the best at his position. Now, we're going to take this conversation one step further today, talking about Fred's general greatness as it pertains to being a former BYU Cougar, no less. Jerem, can Fred Warner, given this trajectory, become the greatest BYU Cougar in NFL history?
No! Steve Young will not be surpassed. He will not. Super Bowl MVP. Bigger deal to me is two-time NFL MVP in 92 and 94.
That's tough to beat.
Fred's going to do a lot. I said it like 2 years ago. He is headed for the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
He will be a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's amazing. Okay, four-time first-team All-Pro. He's already stacked up more than Steve did. But what Steve did was three first-team All-Pro, three second-team All-Pro, six times in the top two there. If Fred gets two NFL MVPs and a Super Bowl MVP,
now he's in the conversation.
Start to have the conversation, okay? Todd Christensen I would put in this space too. Three-time first-team All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, led the NFL in receptions twice, which was incredible for a tight end. 83 and 86. To me, those are your top three greatest BYU players in the NFL ever. Steve is number one. It's going to be hard to pass him. I don't think that Fred will do it. That's not an indictment on Fred. Fred, to me, is probably the second best player in NFL history from BYU. He's in the top three for sure, and he's the best defensive player ever from the Cougars, which is amazing. So congratulations to Fred for getting the bag again. And what's interesting is, he has been a way better NFL player than college player. He was a very good college player. He's been an elite NFL player.
He has made the jump, as they say. How many linebackers in the history of the NFL have won league MVP? Maybe Ray Lewis?
I don't know. It's not going to happen. In the modern era, it's an offensive award.
It's almost impossible to do that. So if we're talking about MVPs and Super Bowl MVPs, that's already an almost impossible hurdle for Fred Warner to be able to climb to catch Steve Young.
Would he have to stack up like 9 first-team All-Pros to equal that or something? When you're named the best player in the entire NFL twice, it's hard for me to point to anybody else and say, yes, they can pass you. Like, what Steve did is the best. This isn't a conversation about Steve, though. Fred's amazing. I'm so happy that Fred came to BYU, and it was it's been amazing to watch him. We'll continue to watch him. The only thing that's bad about this, as a Seahawks fan, is that he plays for the Niners. Because I have to root against his team. But I want Fred to be great. It's a weird deal. Same with Puka. Why do we have two in the same division?
So here's the deal. Both of those guys generally will be great, win or lose for their teams.
Most of the time,
absolutely. So you can probably have your cake and eat it too on occasion with the Seahawks winning and those guys still playing great.
And if it's up to me, it's the Niners that need to be out of the playoffs. But no, they've been to a couple Super Bowls, right, the last 5 years, and Fred's been amazing.
Okay,
been
little amazing. Research for you. There are only two players in NFL history on the defensive side of the ball that have won the MVP. Two! The latest was in 1986 by a linebacker, no less. It was Lawrence Taylor. But he had 20 and a half sacks that season.
So just get 21 sacks and maybe, no. They don't hand it to T.J. Watt, do they?
I mean, it.
They don't hand it to Aaron Donald anymore. He's
it
retired.
It is almost impossible for Fred Warner, no matter how good he is. Even if he won one NFL MVP and became the first to do it since Lawrence Taylor, Steve Young did it twice.
Well, maybe Fred should do what Taysom does, which is play on offense and play all the positions.
Again, this has nothing to do with...
How about Fred scores more touchdowns on his interceptions?
If Fred Warner played quarterback, okay. Yeah. It's just easier by nature of the sport and offensive league and what you do to win the MVP as a quarterback.
Why don't we hand out a defensive MVP of the year? Or do they do that? I don't think they
typically
do, right?
Do an AP defensive player of the year in the NFL. I don't know if it's an NFL award, though.
I don't think he's been that guy. If he did that like 5 times, that equal to 2 NFL... I don't know. Again, I don't want this to be a conversation about Steve. I want it to be about Fred. Fred's amazing.
It's a fun conversation.
Perhaps the second best player ever from BYU, which is amazing.
It's a worthy conversation because of his greatness. Like, whoa, is he? No. Steve Young will always be that guy if and until some other probably quarterback comes along and wins multiple NFL MVPs and a Super Bowl championship and is a Hall of Famer.
At some point, there will be a player that will be better than Steve. That's how this goes.
It's probably not going to be a linebacker.
We didn't think that there would be a Jimmer, but there was, right? Jimmer came along 30 years later after Danny.
I know that there are some of you, especially in the younger generation, that are out there saying, but what about Puka? Okay, Puka is spectacular.
He's had 2 really good years. Great years, yeah.
It's tough to win the MVP as a wide receiver.
And this isn't about MVP. It's just levels of
and
greatness.
And Super Bowl championships. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Puka, if he continues on this trajectory, too, is pacing for a Hall of Fame career. But you need longevity and to continue to do this.
Well, he's already said he wants to retire at, what, age 30?
Yeah. So pack it in.
In 6 years or something? Like
the Barry Sanders route, be amazing, and then retire early.
Except he already made the playoffs.
So you know what's crazy? Yesterday we celebrated our 3,000th episode.
Was that yesterday?
Yeah. I know. Does it feel like a long time ago?
It's all cleaned up.
Nice. Shout out to the crew for doing that, Ben Bagley.
The crew, a.k.a. Dave Phillips. Ben, the bus.
Yes, those are our people, right? Those are our people. So one of our first shows in this studio on the original set featured a very, very young, in fact, 17-year-old Fred Warner in the studio, Bizzle, before he even moved into his dorm room at BYU. At that time, we were comparing him to Kyle Van Noy, Jerem. And he told us he understood the comparison, but that he wanted more.
I've gotten all the comparisons for sure so far. He's an awesome player to be compared to, obviously. I don't want to try and live in the shadow. I want to try and surpass what he did.
June 19th, 2014.
Not bad.
This Young is what, Fred.
First off, I have a mustache. That's terrible. Second, Fred, we don't have the dreads yet. And then the set. We used to think that set was cool.
It was cool in its own right. I was 11 years
ago.
If
you love the dollar store, yeah.
It had personality. Store, yeah, the tchotchke feel.
When it doesn't look good, that's what you say. Focus on the other things. a lot going on there. Top button was not down, I had not converted quite yet to that. But this is about
Fred. So was that a downgrade?
This is about Fred, yeah. Well, this whole thing was a downgrade.
Look at the top button. Like you going top button up.
No, literally
upgrade.
Is
that an improvement?
Oh, literally upgrade.
Is this an improvement?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is about Fred. Don't lose sight of that. Stay on target, Red 5.
You brought it up!
Focus. Yeah, Fred. He's awesome, man. Love Fred. So congratulations, Fred.
Young Fred. Now, that's fun to look back at. Holy cow. He wanted more, and he got more. $63 million more, as a matter of fact, yesterday. Our question
can't buy happiness, but you can rent it.
Our question of the day, what can Fred Warner do to become the greatest BYU Cougar in NFL history? We talked about what we think it might take. Cross Patch on X says he would have to obliviate, isn't that a spell in Harry Potter? The entire world's memory of Steve Young and Andy Reid. Heck, may have to throw Todd Christensen in there as well.
Yeah, if we're talking, yeah, coaches, Andy inserts himself in there above Fred. Mm. Yeah.
Did you mean
oblivion? Is Andy greater than Steve? I've never thought about that in terms of.
That's tough because one
coach
was
versus player.
Ultimately elite on the field, and the other was elite as a coach.
Yeah. And Andy's been to what? 5, 6 Super Bowls, 1, 3? It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Andy Reid,
like
is
as the guy, Steve was the backup
Hall
on
of Famer.
The bench and the guy on some other.
Also, did you mean obliterate or did you really mean obliviate?
Maybe in the process of obliterating, that they obliterated the word obliterate,
yes.
And now
yes.
Obliviates the word.
Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram to join that conversation and our question of the day.
Men's Hoops makes it official. They'll open the season in Vegas on November 3rd against Villanova.
Yes.
Ever heard of it?
Yes.
Do you like starting the season with a team like Villanova?
Absolutely. And I've already heard 700 jokes about how it's BYU versus now the Pope because he went to Villanova. Let's put that aside.
What if the Pope and President Nelson were there? I think that'd be great.
That would be incredible.
That'd be cool.
It's not going to happen.
Let's line
that
up.
Be incredible. Those two in Las Vegas.
One of those two could happen.
In Las Vegas.
In the city of sin.
That's not happening.
Repent, sinners.
I love this. This is the first of many for BYU because Kevin Young has learned his lesson. He's got to ramp up the non-conference schedule to get his guys ready for the Big 12 slate. Why not start in this opener in Vegas against what we anticipate will be a strong Villanova team? Now, if BYU are playing Florida, that would be something. They're in the other game.
Florida-Arizona.
Yeah.
With LeBron James' other son,
But this is
Bryce.
A great start. I love it. And I love the location. And BYU fans are going to show up Monday night. It feels like Big Monday. It's a Monday game.
This is the closest thing BYU will get to Big Monday. Do you think BYU will have a Big Monday game in Big 12 play? I hope not. Here's why.
No practice on Sunday?
They don't practice on Sunday. Yeah. It's not an advantage. It's a massive disadvantage.
I'm with you. But I like it. What's not to like? That's the question.
I can see the argument for, hey, let's have a team that's a little easier to just kind of warm up with and get into this. But here's the name. It's a big name in a cool doubleheader with Florida and Arizona at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. Kind of perfect because Villanova was 56 in net. They weren't a world beater.
Yeah.
They didn't make the NCAA tournament. They played in the basketball crown.
The crown. Crown them.
You want to crown them? Then crown them. Big name venue, TNT. Possibly out of the gate. I think it's pretty good.
Great exposure.
I think it's great. And BYU comes in as a preseason top 10 team. That'll be fun. BYU can stare across the way, look at the national champs, and say, okay, that's the goal. Be like those guys.
I had your thought for a second where it's like, does BYU want to ramp up a game? But they have those scrimmages, Jerem.
They have Nebraska, and then they have another one, TBD.
So to me, it feels like they're already going.
Yeah.
Like, this is just the first game that counts in the regular season.
It'll be game 3. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter as much, I don't think, in that regard.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Power conferences, speaking of power sports, power basketball, all the sports, have drafted a contract that, get this, would bind schools to the new enforcement rules and require schools to waive the right to sue over decisions by the new enforcement entity, the College Sports Commission. Hey, we're going to make the rules, and if you don't like something, you can't sue us, essentially. What are your thoughts on schools being forced to sign their rights away or risk their conference membership if they don't fall in line?
Man, I already miss the idea of fewer lawsuits and legalese that I need to swim through. No, there's a lot of weird here. You know, you can read about this online, but obey state law, potentially get out of your conference. There's some conflicts there. NIL Go is going to be this enforcer of booster pay. BYU will always play by the rules. We know that. And so whatever they are, let's do that. But BYU is benefiting by what this is right now. So I'm not inclined to want to change it that much.
BYU's
at the moment.
Doing well in the wild, wild west, Jerem.
It's going great. Now that NIL is above board, not below board, where it's you're paying people under the table, BYU is competing in a way that they didn't before because they wanted to operate by the rules, and they always will. How enforceable will different laws and contracts be after all this? I don't know. The lawyers will figure that out. But the way that BYU is competing on and off the field and court right now is at a super high level. I'm not inclined to have it change much, frankly.
BYU, as you said, will follow the rules. They're not going to throw up a flag and be like, well, we're getting out of the Big 12 then. No.
Like, can you imagine?
No.
For 40 years, wandering in the wilderness, getting in one, and be like, we're out.
And like,
no.
We're out. No. We don't want to fall.
We begged for this.
No. BYU will stay in. I just don't like the idea that you can't have a conversation about something that might feel weird. Or if a school is like, well, that feels unfair to us, can we at least talk about it and like go through the process and put it up for counsel or something? It just feels way too black and white. Like, they're just like, you either follow the rules or you're out. Like, all of a sudden.
Yeah, sounds like some places I've heard of.
Yes, I guess I am.
That I abide by.
I am spirit of the law
that I like
in this conversation.
Yeah.
Right? I am not letter of the law here. I'm more spirit of the law. At least can you have a conversation to discuss things? Because
that's for the lawyers to figure out.
Undoubtedly, there will be some gray area conversations as we figure this thing out. This just seems like sudden and very, very strict. Like, why? Let's just talk about it instead of just throwing this out there.
You want the cool bishop or the cool mission president, you know? You
don't
want
spirit
the,
of the law.
You want the super strict
spirit
one.
Of the law. All right. We got a lot to talk about
today. Let me watch Disney movies. We literally watched Lord of the Rings. This is crazy. The USA Today released revenue numbers for Power Conference leagues from the 23-24 season, so basically a year ago, not this past season. The Big Ten came in with a whopping $928 million, SEC $840, ACC $711, Pac-12 $567 in their final year of regular Pac-12. And then the Big 12 at 494. 10 of the 12 Pac-12 teams are gone. It's not considered a power league anymore, Spencer. Mm-hmm. But regarding this revenue gap from the Big 12 to the other three, are you concerned about it and where we're headed there?
A little bit, but not majorly based on the 2023-24 numbers because it was a full measure of the Pac-12. And now the Pac-12 has obviously dissolved. Four of those teams are in the Big 12, which by nature of the $31.6 million that each Big 12 institution gets, if you times $31.6 million
this year.
Times 16 teams, that's $510 million. That's just the TV contract primarily centered around football. What does that mean for basketball and all the other sports? I need to see the numbers.
To me, my understanding is that that's football and men's basketball.
What I'm saying is I need to see the numbers after this year to have a better understanding of where the Big 12 actually sits in comparison to a conference like the ACC, because it's a battle for third. We know that the SEC and the Big 10 are going to be 1 and 2. That's not going to change. But can the
Are you concerned about that gap then with those two?
No, not right now. Not right now.
When would you?
Probably in a decade if there is like considerable separation. Like
if it maintains this?
If the Big 12 is now at $1.2 billion and the Big 12 is at $600 million, then you're being doubled up and it's like, how do we keep up with that?
It's almost doubled up with the Big 10.
But I still feel like it's like a decade away. And I feel
the
like
Big 10 is now the double up almost. It's
now 840 and 494 is, no.
No, 928 with Big 10. Like, that's close to double.
Okay.
With the Big Ten right now. Rutgers is doubling up BYU. Ah!
That was 2023-24. Again, I need to see the numbers for how it factors out with 16-team conferences in play. Because it's different. So when I see those numbers, then I can make a better assessment of like, oh boy, is it panic time right now? But we have to see what it means after the Pac-12 has essentially dissolved into the state that it is now.
Okay, so, yeah, those numbers are overall. So, remember, this is the first year of the new contracts, 31.7. So, that's exciting. Think about all the good that BYU did the last year. That was at about $19 million in TV revenue. It's about to go up to 32 almost.
Let's go.
This year.
Brett Yormark was saying with basketball and everything else going on, he feels that they're confident.
It can be up to 50.
Yeah.
So, that includes TV contracts, sponsorships, conference tournament championship games, units for March Madness, and so on and so forth. So, rev share is going to eat into a piece of that. Remember that, up to 20 and a half mil. But hey, we're talking about $30 million in revenue per year. BYU's never gained more starting now. They've also never spent more on things. So I'm excited about what the future holds because last year was a glimpse, as Brian Santiago said, and BYU was not getting a full share of the dough.
Now comes the
Utah's
full share.
Had 12 years of a head start on this. And look what BYU did in year two in the league.
Let's go. Do this. All right, speaking of getting paid and money, Tyler Batty trying to do that in the NFL as an undrafted free agent. He was featured in a NewYorkTimes.com article. In that article, Tyler's dad, Lane, quoted Vikings coaches, said in the first meeting, every position is open. It's yours for the taking. Who wants it? Who wants it the most? Tyler obviously wants it. Do you feel like he will make a 53-man roster in Minnesota, Jerem?
I do. I think he's too skilled, too good of a leader, too good of an attitude. They play a 3-4. He's currently not listed on the depth chart, by the way, for ESPN or our lads at defensive end. And I've confirmed with Tyler this morning, he is playing linebacker for the Vikings.
Awesome.
That's different. Little Sam, little Rover there. He's third string there. You know who else is third string at right inside linebacker or Rover inside? Max Tooley is hanging out with the Vikings
as well.
He's been
on the practice squad, yeah.
Which is exciting. So, I do think he will make it.
I think he's
and at backer, that's different.
I think he's at worst a practice squad guy. Now, I know that Minnesota seemed like a good landing spot. We brought this up the day after the draft on that Monday because they were lacking defensive ends and depth at that position. But interesting that he's been pushed back to linebacker. Does that make it harder for him to make the roster if he is not playing at a position group where they did have a considerable need? Notably the defensive edge.
I would think he'd need to shed 10 or 15 pounds just to be able to move a little bit at outside backer. Physically, he's got a lot of
traits. He's a monster.
Yeah.
I think at worst he's on the practice squad with Max Tooley. Like Tyler will be with the Minnesota Vikings in some capacity.
And who knows what that looks like. Again, if we were talking about Taysom Hill in the same category, we would have been talking about the Packers.
Yeah.
We didn't know that, hey, he would get cut. Saints would pick him up, and he would thrive.
And we do
who
need to
clarify.
Who
knows what this looks like?
So you brought Taysom Hill up in that regard a couple of weeks ago, and I had a few people say, no, he didn't get cut. The Packers didn't cut him. The Saints just picked him up. No, the Packers had to cut him.
He was waived.
So that he could clear waivers.
Yeah, no, he's
and be
cut
available.
Or waived. Yes, that's what happened.
He was cut by the Packers.
They were hoping no one would pick him up.
Because they wanted him on the practice squad.
Yes.
They took a risk,
yes.
And it bit him. And
it's crazy.
Came and put him on
like 95%, I would say, of the time, we know what we're talking about. 5%, probably not.
Oh, it's a great story. It makes it better, too. Taysom got cut.
The point is to be in the NFL. If it's with the Vikings, great. If not, whatever. Just somebody.
Let's go Tyler. Let's go Max.
Yep, all the guys.
Okay.
Join us Friday for a BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue featuring inspiring stories from BYU men's basketball like Richie Saunders, Dawson Baker, Mawit Mag, and more. Friday noon Eastern on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
After the break, we'll talk with the host of Locked On NBA Big Board and his podcast, Rafael Barlow, about what he saw from Yegor Demin at the NFL Draft Combine in Chicago and how much he moved up said draft board. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Obviously was the point guard for BYU this past year.
Is he a lottery pick lock now?
He shot the lights out. I mean, it was very impressive. He definitely wants the ball in his hand. He's such an incredible playmaker. Teams are feeling good about him.
Wow. We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. We spoke about the several reports out of Chicago on the NBA Draft Combine as it pertains to Yegor Demin and how he impressed. And now we're going to bring in another guy who was at the Combine watching Yegor and others very closely. He is the host of Locked On NBA Big Board podcast and the director of scouting at NBA Big Board. He is Rafael Barlow. Rafael, welcome to BYU Sports Nation.
Thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be on, and I've actually watched this show a few times. So
let's go.
It's cool. Yep.
Well, we're glad to have you part of the family now. So you realize what you've done. Like, you opened the door. We're going to keep asking you to come on the show.
I might call you again now.
I'm with it. Anytime, let me know. I'm with it.
All right, let's talk about Chicago and Yegor Demin specifically. What was your initial impression of him when you first watched him play at the Combine?
Well, he participated in the shooting drills, and he did a pro day, but he didn't actually like play 5-on-5. So just want to get that out there. But I thought he helped himself. I thought he looked good. I may be a little bit biased. I've been following him since he was like 14 or 15 years old. I even went to Madrid to watch him play the fall before last. So he's someone that I'm definitely rooting for. But I feel like he's helped himself a lot since he had the part of the season where he struggled a little bit after, getting off to the blazing start. So But I think, like I said, he helped himself a lot.
Where did he help himself the most?
Well, one, the size was legit. I mean, if you've seen him up and close in person, then you knew that he was going to measure pretty well. I think for some teams, just seeing the official height helped. And then he shot the cover off the ball at the pro day. I think he made like 16 threes in a row, and he showed some good ball handling. And then he's just a really good kid. And in the interview process, I mean, I wasn't in the interviews, but I'm confident that he interviewed really well. And so with his combination of size and his passing, and it's just a workout, but one of the big concerns is the shooting. And if he alleviated some of those concerns about the outside shooting, then it's hard to say he didn't help himself.
Rafael Barlow follows the NBA draft very closely. He's on BYU Sports Nation. It felt like going into Chicago, Yegor was, and I'm giving rough terms here, slated somewhere between 12 and 21 in the first round of this year's NBA draft. Now I'm seeing reports of gulp as high as number 6 in some instances and down to about 18. So where do you see him falling ultimately in the approaching NBA draft after he made a move at the combine?
I think he's a top 10 pick, and I've had him in the lottery range. I haven't had him outside the lottery all year. I mean, on one hand, yes, it's a combine. It's really hard for me to believe someone's draft stock can just skyrocket without playing 5-on-5 play and based off of what they did in a 1-on-0 shooting drill. But I mean, I've had him as a lottery pick pretty much all year. I'm actually surprised to see some had him outside of the top 20. But I do think that it's still somewhat of an acquired taste. I know I've talked to some teams about him before. Some had some concerns if he was really like a full-time point guard in the NBA. And then there were some teams that liked him because they said, we have enough guys on our team that want to shoot the ball all the time. And so we're not concerned about him not always being aggressive and assertive on offense because we have those guys. We need someone that is unselfish and that wants to get them the ball. So I do think it's somewhat of the eyes of the beholder.
What do you feel is his greatest strength and kind of style relative to the NBA game and being a point guard?
Definitely his positional size. And I forgot what the exact measurements were, but when he puts on shoes, he's going to be 6'9". I saw him a couple of days ago, and I said, are you growing? Like, he looks like he's still growing. And I know, like, my brother had met him for the first time. My brother was with me. And I guess because he has such a baby face, he looks like a little kid. But when he get up on him, you're like, man, this guy's a giant. So, obviously, it's the positional size, and he's the best passer in the draft. He has really good feel and his unselfishness. And I think with his size, it gives him a lot of flexibility to, let's say he's not a full-time point guard, but at his size, you can play him at the 2 or the 3, and you have another ball handler and ball mover and playmaker on the floor, as you've seen a lot of teams are playing multi-ball handler lineups. So I think it's just his size and his passing makes him a really alluring prospect for some teams.
Every player wants the perfect fit among the 30 teams in the NBA. So in your opinion, Rafael, for a guy like Yegor, where is his best fit or best fits at this point?
It sounds funny to say this, and maybe I'm a bit biased because I live in Dallas, but it would be the Dallas Mavericks, honestly, because I went to a lot of Mavericks games and they had scores. Like when Kyrie went out, or after they made the Luka Doncic trade, so you had scores. You had guys like Anthony Davis, you had Kyrie Irving, who played point, but I think he's best and more so of a combo role. You had guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, guys that are really gifted scorers, but they did not have a single person on the roster that was a pass-first table setter. So to me, a team like Dallas, even though they have the number one pick, and it's a lot to be
just
Cooper
take him
Flag.
Over Cooper Flagg. You know, just take Yegor Demon. That would make total sense to no one.
That would be rough for Nico Harrison. Talk about. That would be rough for him. But that's just like just fit, not including like draft range or anything like that. Obviously Utah. I mean, Utah has
Let's
some
go!
Guards. And they have some scores. I mean, Isaiah Collier, I thought he outperformed where he was drafted. He's
totally.
Definitely an aggressive downhill driver, and he's unselfish. But Utah's kind of on the smaller side as far as their guards, and taking a big guard like Demon could, you know, allow Keontae to play more so of the combo role off the ball. And he's just unselfish. I know he would be a fan favorite there. And sometimes, you know, that can be a factor in where guys drafted. Other teams that I think could be a good fit, I think I had them slated going to Toronto.
Okay.
Toronto likes a lot of, you know, big size. And so I think, like, Yegor is the type of unselfish guy that could unlock, you know, an R.J. Barrett. And Toronto has the 9th pick, I believe.
Yep.
And they've had some success at number 9. You had Tracy McGrady was the 9th pick in 97. And DeMar DeRozan was the 9th pick about 11 to 12 years later. So if Yegor could be the next great number 9 pick,
okay,
that would be ideal. But I just think with his size and his passing, it gives him so much. It gives him so many options. But also, if he can prove the teams that the shooting numbers were just down this year, then if a team believes that, then I could see him going within the top 5 or 6.
That'd be amazing. That really would. That'd be awesome. Let's ask you about next year's draft. Obviously, A.J. Dubonsa is a massive potential number 1 pick. What are your thoughts on A.J.? And then how do you feel about Richie Saunders, Robert Wright III, and their potential pro prospects in the future as well?
A.J. is special. I first saw A.J. after his freshman year in high school, and he was playing for a team out of the Boston area. I mean, you talk about positional size, athleticism, natural scoring instincts. I mean, all the hype surrounding him is legit. And I'll be honest here, A.J. had a very, very, very good senior year, and I still think we didn't see the best out of him because he was bored. That's just my personal opinion. I think
a bigger challenge will be good for him.
A bigger challenge. I think he was pulled away in just all these different outside the court stuff. I think once he goes to college, he's still going to have a little bit of that pull, but it's just going to be more basketball. And I think there's a challenge. And then I also think that with Darren Peterson, who's going to Kansas, emerging as a potential number 1 pick, along with Cameron Boozer at Duke, I think there's going to be another sense of motivation to prove that I am better than those guys. Why are they mentioning them in my name, you know, next to my name? So I think he's going to have more of a chip on his shoulder this year because, like I said, in high school, I felt like he was just a little bit bored. I can score 30 with my eyes closed.
What are the odds BYU has multiple draft picks next year with the aforementioned Richie Saunders and Robert Wright III joining A.J. Dubonsa?
Well, Richie, honestly, I mean, BYU fans, don't get mad at me for saying this, but if I were him, I would have tested this year. I would have absolutely put my name in the draft just to see, you know, where I stand. I mean, he was one of the best players in the country. He's a big-time shooter, and sadly, sometimes when you label someone as a big-time shooter, you think of a guy that's just standing still in the corner, knocking down open threes. No, he can shoot on the move. He can put the ball on the floor. And he's a little bit older than most of the prospects, but I think that may have helped him in a sense because there are some teams that are like, we have too many young guys. We need someone that we think can come in and play right away, and every team needs shooting on the wing. So I would have tested this year, but I know for BYU fans, it is great that he came back. And then Robert Wright, I mean, at times I felt like he was Baylor's best freshman. And Vijay Edgecombe, who was his teammate, is probably going to be a top 5 or 6 pick. But I love what Robert Wright does. I just felt like he was overshadowed, and it's going to happen at BYU also, but he was overshadowed because he played on the Montverde High School team that had 4 guys that are probably going to be first-round picks, and Cooper Flagg and Derek Queen and Asa Newell. Then he goes to Baylor, and he's a little overshadowed, but, I mean, he had a really, really good freshman year, and I think BYU got a really, really good replacement for Yegor and Robert Wright.
He is the host of Locked On NBA Big Board and that podcast, Rafael Barlow, on BYU Sports Nation. How do BYU fans and basketball fans in general find more of your material?
Yeah, I have a newsletter, NBABigBoard.com, and I write 2 or 3 times a week. And then I have a podcast on the Locked On Network, and Locked On has strong ties to Utah, as David Locke, the founder, is works with the Utah Jazz. So I'm on the Locked On Network at Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. And I have a podcast, and I do 5 days a week, so I'm pretty easy to find.
Let's go. Hey, we know all about the 5 days a week thing. That's awesome.
Hey, get a nap in. You sounded tired there.
No time for sleep at this time of year.
That's right.
For sure. Hey, good luck as you build up to the draft. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Anytime you want me on, we can talk right after the draft. Let me know. Make it happen.
Let's go. Rafael Barlow, the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast.
That was great. I love that. 12-seed BYU baseball plays 5-seed Arizona State coming up tomorrow. Early start in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, Globe Life Field, home of the Texas Rangers. 11 a.m. Eastern time, BYU Radio, ESPN+. The game will be going on during the show. We'll give you some updates throughout the program.
Awesome. Jeremiah, I have some other great news. There's another top 25 college football rankings board out. Did Jake Retzlaff make the list?
If you're telling me it's great news.
Well, the fact that the board's out. Just more to talk about.
That's great news that the board's out?
Yes.
Okay.
This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social for content throughout the day, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. This is episode 3001 in the history of this show. And time for today's headlines.
Fred Warner agrees to a 3-year, $63 million extension with the San Francisco 49ers. Four-time All-Pro becomes the NFL's highest-paid linebacker. This is the second contract in a 7-year career that has made him the highest-paid linebacker. It's hard to do it twice. He did it.
56.7 guaranteed. That
guaranteed.
That's the number.
Dinner's on Fred.
Yep. BYU men's basketball announces their 2025 season opener officially against Villanova in the Hall of Fame series at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas.
All right.
Monday, November 3rd. That's a bye week for BYU football the previous Saturday.
Oh,
perfect
beautiful.
Timing. Perfect.
Love it.
In the announcement, head coach Kevin Young noted, quote, one of our main focuses heading into the 2025-26 season was playing a tougher non-conference schedule, and the Hall of Fame series Las Vegas helps us achieve that, end quote. Matchup, part of an opening night doubleheader that will air on TNT, Florida and Arizona in the other game.
Joe Lunardi released his latest bracketologist this morning, and amazingly, BYU's dropped a seed without doing it.
What?
They go from a 2 to a 3 seed. Whatever that means.
Fine.
In May.
The sporting news, Jerem. It's the good news I was talking about just a few minutes ago.
Some call it the gospel, the good news.
They have Jake Retzlaff as the 21st best quarterback in all of college football heading into the 2025 season. That ranking puts him fifth best among quarterbacks in the Big 12 behind, notably, Arizona State's Sam Levitt, TCU's Josh Hoover, Iowa State's Rocco Becht, and Baylor's Sawyer Robertson. Retzlaff threw for just under 3,000 yards and 20 touchdowns last season.
Ahead of Avery Johnson?
Ahead of Avery Johnson.
Interesting. Okay. Women's volleyball announced the signing of transfer Emma Barbero. She's from Italy. Junior libero transferred from Wazoo, where she helped the other Cougars make a Sweet 16 appearance in 23. Led them in digs last year, second most aces with 31.
This just in, literally moments ago, got the notification that BYU softball freshman Ilovea Brittingham has been named a third-team All-American.
Hey!
Not just freshman All-American, like straight up.
Yes.
All-American third team, according to, again, Softball America, the outlet announcing this morning. She deserves it.
I'm going to make sophomore All-Americans, junior All-Americans, and senior, just there's no delineations after the freshman. No one's doing that right now. Yeah. For softball, let's do that.
I mean,
she's just so
special.
She's
led the Big 12 in home runs with 21.
Also led with vowels in her name. She's pretty awesome, too.
Yes. Yeah, yes, she did. She's got that going
for her. Legit all over the place.
After the break. Hey, let's continue on with the Miller Park theme, only on the baseball side. Brock Watkins of BYU Baseball discusses the upcoming matchup against Arizona State in the Big 12 tourney at Globe Life Field. What he'll remember most about his time at BYU. This is BYUSN. To BYU Sports Nation, we are live in Studio B. BYU Baseball faces Arizona State in the opening round of the Big 12 tournament tomorrow in Texas. Yesterday, in preparation for that single elimination game, Jason Shepherd spoke with BYU senior Brock Watkins to preview the game and look back on his career. Here's that conversation.
All right, Brock, we need to start off with the really important stuff. We'll get to the baseball stuff in a minute. Today's your birthday, right?
It is. Yeah, it is.
Do you want to divulge how old you are? Or do you want to keep that a secret and a little bit of a mystery?
Yeah, we can keep it a secret. Sure. I don't care.
Well, okay. Do you consider doing media and doing interviews on your birthday? Is that like, would that be considered a gift, or is this like what I can give you for your birthday is an opportunity to be on BYU Sports Nation?
Yeah, I'll accept this gift from you, Shep. Thank you.
All right,
yeah.
you're very, very welcome. Well, the good news is we're talking about you guys going to the Big 12 tournament. I want to know from your perspective how rewarding it is after an up and down season to be able to have put yourself in this position to go to Arlington and play in the tournament.
Yeah, it's really rewarding. It was one of our goals at the beginning of the year. We sat down as a team in this room and we laid out our goals, and this was the one we wanted to get to first. So we had to go to the tournament to get onto the next step. So yeah, we made it, and we're happy to be there.
The beauty of these tournaments is that regardless of what everybody's record was in the regular season, when you start these tournaments, everybody is 0-0. How confident are you guys going into this tournament, knowing that the playing field is now level for everybody?
Yeah, I think we're really confident. We know we can hang with any of these teams. I think we've shown it on a lot of the Thursday nights that we can. So it's 0-0 now, so it's anybody's game now.
I wanted to ask you about the Texas Tech series. You guys won 2 out of 3 against the Red Raiders this past weekend, and it had been about 2 months since you guys had won a Big 12 series. That's a series that you had to have in order for this to be a reality. What was different? What was the mindset heading into that Red Raiders series? Because obviously you guys were victorious, taking 2 of 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we just really broke it down. Hey, we got to take one pitch at a time, one inning at a time. And I think we really just dialed in our focus. We knew we had to have it, or else we weren't going to be able to make the tournament. So we really dialed up the focus, and I think it really helped.
When you look at what this team has done this year, what do you feel is your biggest strength heading into this tournament? And what is something that you still feel needs to improve if you're going to make a long run here?
I think our strengths, we're a close group. Everybody gets along great, and those are the type of teams that usually go the furthest. And something we can work on is I think we just need to stay positive. We need to, if something doesn't go our way, flip it, get back on the positive. Try to have a short-term memory, and just try to stick with the positive stuff.
Let's talk about you for just a second. You're a senior. You've been here a long time. In fact, Wednesday's game is going to be your 200th career game as a BYU Cougar. When you hear something like that and you look back on your career, what stands out to you? How proud are you of your time at BYU?
I'm proud of it. It's awesome. I've been really lucky to be here as long as I have and been able to play the game as long as I have. So I'm very thankful for that. And being able to play for BYU, it's an honor. So yeah, it's pretty cool seeing the 200th game coming up.
I remember when you got here. I know it's been several years. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. Does it feel like it's been that long for you? Because you've dealt with injuries, and I know that you've had some frustrating times, but does the time feel like it's flown by, even though it's been a little longer than maybe you thought?
It's flown by for sure. Looking back, some of the stuff, I'm like, wow, that feels like forever ago. But, now that you count down the days to when my career's going to be over, yeah, it flies by. So got to enjoy every last second of it.
Let's talk about the matchup against Arizona State. The regular season series, I know, didn't go the way you want. They took all 3 matchups in Tempe. So just give us an idea of how you expect this thing to be different this time around as you face them for the 4th time.
Yeah, it's tough to sweep a team, let alone beat them 4 times. So I think we're feeling pretty confident. We know what they got. They know what we got. But, it's tough to beat a team 4 times. So I think we're pretty confident going into it.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. When you start these tournaments and everybody's on that level playing field, it's all about – you don't have to worry about facing a team more than once. It's a single elimination, and you move on. And so you have the ability to – you win one game, and then you can stretch that into 2. And you really – the team that gets the hottest – in these tournaments is usually the one that's victorious at the end. Is that how you guys look at it? Is like, we just need to play one good game and then see what happens?
Yep, we just need to break it down, like I said earlier, one pitch at a time, one inning at a time, and I think if we do that, we'll have good success. So
talk to me about this team this year and some of the things that you feel may have been overlooked with this team. Because I know you guys improved your record overall. You were a game above 500 overall, so I think that was an improvement of 6 games overall. You were 3 games better in conference. You're making the Big 12 tournament for the first time since joining the Big 12. So all of those numbers were trending positively. What's something that people don't know about this team that has led to you guys making the improvements that you have?
I think just like I was saying earlier, we've done a really good job on, like, if something doesn't go our way, we get right back to the positive. You know, short-term memory, if it's baseball, not everything's going to go your way. So, yeah, just trying to find the positive out of it and getting right back to even, staying even keel the whole game.
I was trying to think if there's ever been a game that has started. Now, it'll start at 9 o'clock Central Time, which will be 8 o'clock Mountain Time into your bodies. Have you ever played a game like that? And is that something that you think will actually factor into this, playing so early?
I don't think I've played a game that early since I was probably like 11 years old. But yeah, it's going to be different. I don't think it'll be anything difficult for us. I think just being at the Big 12 tournament, you know, that'll get you up and get you out of bed in the morning. So I think we'll be just fine.
All right. So to bring it all back around, with today being your birthday, how are you going to celebrate tonight? Are you going to do anything fun? You guys are on your way to Arlington, so you're going to be in Texas. You're going to do anything fun for your birthday?
I don't know. Probably just hang out with the guys, just relax, get ready to play. But yeah, I'm glad we're being able to head out to the Big 12 tournament for my birthday.
Are you expecting any pranks on your birthday, by the way?
I hope not. I don't think so, being as old as I am. I don't think anybody will mess with me. So, yeah, I think it'll be all right.
All right, well, we're going to give you the BYU Sports Nation karma for you to take, for you and for your team, as you guys get ready for the Big 12 tournament. Brock, it's always great to talk with you, and appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
I wouldn't mess with Brock. Join us this Friday for BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue, featuring special inspiring stories from BYU basketball players like Richie Saunders, Dawson Baker, Mawet Mag, and more. Friday, noon Eastern, BYU TV, BYU Radio.
Question: is there anything that Fred Warner can do to become the greatest BYU Cougar in NFL history? Can he pass Steve Young? More responses to our question of the day on the way. This is BYU SN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation is on demand. Download the free BYU TV, BYU Radio app. So listen to the pod, subscribe, rate, and review.
We need to have a podcast talking about what we discussed during the commercial breaks and release it.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep that to ourselves. But yeah.
Our question of the day: what can Fred Warner do to become the greatest BYU Cougar in NFL history?
Nothing.
At Caleb Plew says, become the second linebacker ever to earn NFL MVP honors. Mentioned Lawrence Taylor earlier.
Okay, if he got one MVP as a defensive player, is that greater
than
Steve's?
Because it's so hard to do.
Oh, man. That's probably greater. In terms of, you did something that's crazy. Like, Steve winning the MVP is amazing and crazy, too. But for a quarterback of one of the best teams.
Way more common.
Yeah, it is a possibility. He had to be amazing to do it. I'm not trying to take away from Steve. Love Steve. We all love Steve. But if he did it one time,
then that's the conversation.
Like, the Niners go 16-1. He leads the league with 200 tackles. He's the
NFL
14
MVP.
Picks. He's the NFL MVP. Josh Allen's a runner-up or something.
Now we're having a conversation.
Now we're like, oh my gosh, it's Fred the greatest ever.
We've determined that there actually is a path.
There probably is a path, but it's freaking nuts.
At CougarlCosmo_30 adds this: I don't know if Andy Reid's legacy can be outlived.
I was thinking just players in this combo, but when Andy Reid comes into it, is he the greatest Cougar in the NFL because of what he's done as a coach?
He is a surefire, like, he's first Hall of Famer.
No, yeah, no question.
Does he have to do more? Like, does he have to attain some other status?
He's Super Bowl's dog. He's been to, what is it, 5, 6 with the Eagles?
Isn't he, like, top 5 winningest coach all time?
Might be. He's 5th or 6th. Andy might be the greatest Cougar in the NFL ever.
If we're including coaches,
Andy might be the guy.
That opens it up.
Let's ask Steve.
All right.
Is Andy better than you?
Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, from at BPDub21, who says, Steve Young has a Super Bowl and NFL MVP. On the surface, that looks insurmountable for Fred. Fred's best argument is that he has been widely considered the best at his position for many years.
Yeah, that's good.
Even
good.
At his best, I don't think the same was said for Steve.
That's a good point. There's some good quarterbacks. Like at times, he wasn't the best quarterback on his own team. Like, they battled, which is a fun dynamic for Steve there.
Mm.
Today's Rise and Shoutout presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about this? Locked on Cougars podcast and put this out there. Rise and Shoutout to Enoch Watson,
love this,
quarterback signee for the Cougars, also receiver Jet Nelson. They're companions
love
in
it.
Viña del Mar Chile. Remember to watch the safety zone, boys.
It's like Tanner Mangum and Marone Laulupututau throwing a football around in the same mission.
Oh, that's right. Also right? In Chile, right?
But I don't know that they were ever, were they ever companions like this?
I don't know. That's pretty fun.
Very cool. Our thanks to today's guests, Raphael Barlow and Brock Watkins.
Sorry, Dennis.
For Jeremiah Spencer, shout out to Wally Joyner. See you tomorrow. Go Cougs.
Wow.
All Pro Fred.
Wally.